The Rhodian whispered into Mabo's ear. She looked toward the VIP booths and nodded, then turned to the bidders.
In light of the sudden jump in price, the owner has requested funds verification.
Han barely noticed the approving grunts from the crowd, or the superior looks the other bidding agents threw in the direction of the squibs. He was too shocked by what Mabo had just said.
Owner? Freakin' Horm is the owner?
She caught his arm. Where are you going?
To see a thief.
Even as he said it, Han realized that Tatooine was neither the time nor the place to seek justice. With the Chimera in orbit, Mabo's thugs controlling every door, and an Imperial infiltration squad just meters away on the other side of a mere field, the circumstances were hardly ideal for a citizen's arrest. He sat down and said glumly,
I just wanted to make sure it's him.
I know. Leia's tone suggested she didn't believe a word. We'll take care of Horm on Coruscant. We do know where he lives. At the front of the theater, the Rhodian had produced a comm-linked transfer pad and was descending a small lift platform to the theater floor.
Please ready your transfer chips for a validation reading.
Mabo looked straight at Amala and Greece.
And if you can't cover a bid of 5 million credits, save us all time by retiring from the purchasing area now. I'll buy you a drink later.
A number of bidders left immediately, but the squibs were not among them. The Rhodian security captain and his guards began to work their way down the line, sending bidder after bidder into the spectator area. An angry rumble built in the front of the room as a handful of agents realized someone had stolen their chips. Several more bidders failed to find their transfer chips. The squibs, of course, still had the chip Han and Leia had provided. By the time the validation reading was completed, only the squibs, the Imperials, and 20 minor plutocrats remained in the auction. Once Mabo recovered from the shock of seeing the squibs still on the floor, she accepted their bid. The price steadily climbed, 250,000 at a time. By 10 million, only the squibs and the Imperials remained. At 12 million, Leia winced visibly, no doubt counting the number of blast boats or assault companies the New Republic would not be arming in order to recover the code key inside Killik Twilight. At 13 million, she bit her lip. Sweetheart? Leia removed her holdout blaster from its thigh holster, then twisted one of her counterfeit Leku free of its collar. How close would you need to be to hit my painting with that? She pulled a small silver sphere from inside the tentacle and placed it on the table.
Oh, dear,
C-3PO said.
A thermal detonator.
Relax, Goldenrod. It's a little one.
Leia's tone was impatient. How close? Han gazed through the mirror field for a moment, pretending to study the situation, but really just thinking. In the unlikely event they survived an assault on the painting, he knew how terribly hurt Leia would be if it was destroyed, especially if she was the one who had directed it. Besides, he wanted her to have it back. If not in their home, then at least in a New Republic museum where she can go and visit it. He tossed the detonator in the air and caught it in his palm.
How much time do we have?
The chip is only authorized to 15 million, Leia said. Han tucked the detonator into his pocket, then motioned at the counterfeit Leku on the table.
Better put that back on.
Leaving C-3PO to wait behind, Han and Leia, still disguised as a sharp-toothed Deveronian and his Twi'lek companion, went to Horm's VIP booth. As soon as they turned toward the mirror field, a pair of Horm's human bodyguards stepped out to block their way. The tallest pointed toward the back of the theater.
Refreshers that way, pal.
The guy I'm looking for wouldn't fit, pal.
The bid went to 14 million credits, drawing a gasp from the audience. Han looked past the guards and addressed his own behorn reflection in the mirror field.
You'd be smart to talk to us inside, Horm. Unless you want everyone in the theater to hear who's selling the painting.
After a moment's hesitation, a pudgy hand emerged from the mirror field. It waved them inside, where a pale hut of a human spilled over the safety rails of his high-capacity repulsor chair. With reddish-brown hair cropped short, and a nose so fleshy it was almost shapeless, the occupant of the chair was definitely Threakin Horm. He fixed a pair of beady brown eyes on Han and Leia, but showed no hint of recognition.
"What makes you think anyone here cares where the painting came from? Tatooine is well known for its aversion to questions."
"I doubt anyone here does care," Leia said coolly. "But a certain council on Coruscant would be very interested in knowing what their president is doing with Alderaan's lost treasures." Horm smiled tolerantly, then waved his bodyguards out of the booth and pointed to a switch on the wall.
"Activate the sound filter."
Once Leia had done so, his eyes narrowed to slits.
"For a Twi'lek, you know a lot about Alderaan's business."
"We do our research," Han said.
With the offer at 14.5 million, the auction was about to end.
"Now, you have a choice to make."
"How much do you want?" Horm asked. "And I should warn you, if the figure is too high..."
"It won't be," Han said. "You keep everything."
"Really?"
Horm lifted his brow folds.
"Then why are you here?"
"Because the painting shouldn't go to Imperials," Leia said. "As an Alderaanian, you must understand that."
"You're appealing to my conscience," Horm smirked. "Blackmailers?"
"We're appealing to your sense of self-preservation," Leia said. "If the Council finds out what you've been doing, you'll face fraud charges."
"And if they find out you sold Killik Twi'lek to Imperials,"
Han added,
"someone will hire a bounty hunter. So either you spend the rest of a very short life hiding, or you walk away with..."
He listened to the bid amount.
14.75 million. Decide now, because this auction's almost over."
Horm considered Han for a moment, then dipped his chins in a sort of nod.
"Very well."
His repulsor chair hissed as it tipped forward, so he could extend a beckoning arm through the mirror field.
"I was appalled to see the Imperials here anyway."
A bodyguard stepped into the booth. By the time Horm had given him his instructions, the bidding stood at 14.9. In an overly casual tone, Grease called,
15.
The audience broke into an excited babble, drowning out the remainder of the bid and buying Horm's guard time to go to the stage. The bodyguard went to the rear of the stage, where he was stopped by a Gamorrean who seemed to understand only that his orders were to keep people off the stage. Finally, the Rodian noticed and went over to talk with the bodyguard. By then, Mabo had quieted the crowd. Ever the showwoman, she paused for dramatic effect, then looked back down to Grease.
"I think we all know what the bid was, but would you repeat it for the record?"
15 million credits.
The security captain started across the stage. All eyes shifted toward him, save for those of Kitster Banai, who had not moved his electrobinoculars from Killik Twi'lek since Celia had brought it out. Quentin touched a finger to his ear, then glanced toward Horm's booth. Someone on his team had figured out what Han and Leia were doing in there. Quentin's hand shot up.
15 million 5.
Mabo started to acknowledge the bid, but the Rodian sprang the last few steps and caught her arm. He began whispering into her ear, and the theater broke into inquisitive drone.
15.5, Quentin repeated.
When Mabo did not acknowledge him, Quentin said something into his collar. A dozen fit-looking beings began to move in from the edges of the room, not running, but shouldering and pushing and heading straight for the stage. They were all about the size of large humans and of species with the same general body pattern, and they were all holding one hand beneath a cloak, cape, or jacket loose enough to hide the bulge of a weapon.
"Back to intimidation tactics,"
Han said. He calmed Chewie and told him to stay out of sight behind the Imperials, then drew his blaster.
"When will they learn?"
Leia pulled her holdout blaster from its hiding place on her thigh. In front of the stage, Quentin repeated his bid yet again, this time with the smug air of a threat.
My bid stands at 15.5 million, madam.
Marbo glanced down at him, then looked out at the infiltration team pushing its way toward the stage. Her dark eyes flashed in anger, but her expression remained otherwise unreadable, as she weighed the costs of defying the Empire against the damage her reputation would sustain by allowing Quentin to push her around. Marbo met Quentin's gaze.
I have been directed to accept the Squib's last offer.
A collective gasp filled the theater, and Marbo looked toward Horm's booth.
The owner has decided it would be an outrage to sell the painting to the same Empire that destroyed Alderaan.
The Squibs whooped for joy and huddled in a tight little circle, snickering and chittering in their own language and casting smirks in Quentin's direction. He glared blaster bolts at them, then spoke into his collar. The infiltration squad broke into a run, shoving spectators aside or just kicking them down and running over their backs. The crowd exploded in panic. Towering half a meter above the crowd, Chewbacca managed to look frightened and confused even as he eased forward behind the Imperials. Marbo ordered her Gamorreans to the front of the stage, then turned to Celia.
Take the painting to the...
From somewhere deep behind the stage came a series of low booms, followed quickly by startled cries and the muffled scream of discharging blaster rifles. Horm activated a comlink and sent both bodyguards onto the stage to help guard the moss painting. The Squibs were already taking things into their own hands, darting past the bodyguards, swarming the commander.
Thief! Our painting!
Quentin went down screaming and flailing. His two bodyguards spun to help, their arms extending downward to activate spring-loaded sleeve holsters. Imala reached up and snatched a small silver weapon away as it appeared in the first guard's hand, then used it on the second one. Marbo watched in horror from the stage.
Stop! Not here!
The surviving bodyguard plucked Reese and Sly off Quentin, shaking them violently, trying to snap their necks. Imala shot him in the knee. A stray bolt came through the holograph and struck the valance above Celia's head. She screamed and abandoned the painting, rushing to a lift platform concealed in the floor and descending into the stage. Quentin scrambled to his feet, yelling for help and ordering his infiltration squad after the Squibs. Imala whistled and the rodents scurried out of sight. Marbo took her lead from Celia and raced for the back of the stage, leaving her Gamorreans to form a perimeter around the apron. But a dozen Gamorrean security guards were no match for an Imperial infiltration squad, and Han knew it.
Cover me!
Han stepped out of the booth, and darts began zipping past his head. Leia's holdout blaster began to spray dashes of color over his shoulder. A small hand grabbed his collar and pulled him back into the booth.
What? Did I marry a Gundark? Leia asked, crouching next to him.
More darts hissed over their heads, and Horm cried out several times. Judging by the anguished gasps that followed, the Imperials were using a fast-acting neurotoxin. Chewbacca appeared at the edge of the panic crowd, coming up behind a Kuwati aristocrat and her Telvin. He slammed their heads together, and they went down with sickening dents in their skulls. The remainder of Quentin's infiltration squad emerged from the shrieking crowd and began to spray darts everywhere. The Gamorreans dropped without swinging an axe blade, and Han and Leia had to take refuge behind Horn's repulsor chair. Han reached around the side and found he could just reach the controls.
Stick close. I have a plan.
Han!
Han stopped short of moving the chair.
Yeah?
Use the detonator, Leia said.
Han shook his head.
You don't want that. I know you.
And how do you think I'll feel when the Imperials crack Shadowcast and start executing our agents?
Leia removed the detonator from Han's pocket, thumbed the fuse to 20 seconds, and activated it.
Do I have to throw this myself?
And you say you married a Gundark.
Han took the detonator, peered over the top of the chair, and saw the first stormtrooper emerging at the rear of the stage.
Killick Twilight still rested on its easel. 15 seconds. 14, Leia counted. Han stood and threw. He did not see the squibs until the detonator hit and began to roll toward Killick Twilight. They were clambering over the other side of the stage. Han rushed out of the booth.
Imala! Sly! Detonator!
He pointed, and the squib's eyes went to the silver orb rolling toward the painting. So did the stormtroopers. The squibs dived over the front of the stage, and the troopers stumbled back through the cityscape holograph, firing wildly in Han's direction. Then, a dark-haired man rose into view, riding the same lift platform Celia had used to escape.
No!
Han yelled. The man sprang onto the floor, kicked the detonator toward the front of the stage, snatched Killick Twilight off its easel, and raced for the far corner. Han glanced at the holograph above the stage and instantly recognized the immaculately groomed hair.
Kister Benai?
Leia caught Han's collar again and jerked him into the booth backward. He did not see whether Benai made it out alive. All he saw was the white flash of the exploding detonator. The Weequay, grunts, had been clever enough to bring Leia and the others into Espa Heights from the backside, so they were peeking down on the Benai household from a sand-choked alley directly above and behind the home. It was a typical house for this part of town, with one large dome and three smaller ones arranged in a diamond around a central courtyard. A tarnished maintenance droid was out using a shovel vac to clear the enclosure of the last of the storm deposits, so it was impossible to hear what sounds might be drifting out of the air vents in the roofs. But through the window bubbles in the dome walls, they could see flying dishes and overturned furniture. Chewbacca glared at grunts and growled. C-3PO leaned over the shoulder of the crouching Weequay and translated this, rather diplomatically, Leia knew, as,
Master Chewbacca was under the impression that we would arrive before the Imperials.
Who says we didn't? Grunts retorted.
Leia knitted her brow. We need to get down there and figure out what happened to Kitster and Killick Twilight. Grunts pulled a light repeating blaster from beneath his sand cloak. Grunts? Perhaps it would be better if you kept watch from here. Leia passed a comlink to the Weequay. C-3PO raised a hand.
Mistress Leia, perhaps keeping watch is a duty suitable for...
Forget it, Goldenrod. Han stepped over the side and led the way down a short bank toward the Benai house. We need someone to talk to that maintenance droid. Down in the courtyard, the maintenance droid's photoreceptors were shining up in their direction. C-3PO spat a burst of static at it, and the droid replied with a similar burst.
How interesting. There are three squibs inside. He says it's going to take a week to clean up.
Squibs? Leia looked at Han and shook her head, then grabbed his hand. Cover us, Chewie. Leia led the way to the primary dome and peered through a transparent steel door. A blonde woman in her mid-30s was squatting in the corner, covering her head and biting her lip, as the squibs raced around, touching objects to their cheeks, then smashing them. Sly sent a plate of blue allosal spinning into the wall above the woman's head, and she finally screamed. Grease jumped onto her knees and yelled so loud his voice was barely muffled by the door.
Where is he?
I told you, at the auction.
Liar!
Grease hopped down in front of a carved bantha bone cabinet, then opened a drawer and sent an empty flatware tray flying across the room.
That's where we came from!
Leia and Han checked each other to make sure their sand cloak hoods concealed their faces. Then Leia opened the door. Nobody inside seemed to notice.
He must have left, the woman said. How would I know?
Sly went to her side and snatched a comlink from her tunic pocket.
I'm sure a bright woman like you knows how to work one of these.
You want me to call him?
Good idea.
That's enough, you three, Han said, stepping into the room.
The three squibs spun on their heels and, finding no sign of head horns or tentacles, did not seem to recognize their business partners. They immediately spread out across the cluttered floor and began to ease forward.
"Leave while you still can,"
Grease said. He slipped a hand behind his back as though reaching for a blaster that Leia had already seen was not there.
"This is no business of yours."
"Actually, it is." Leia waved Chewbacca and C-3PO through the door. "You might recognize our associates." Grease's eyes narrowed. He barked something in Squibian, and all three squibs stopped advancing.
"You!"
He glowered at Chewbacca.
"You took us for 1,000 credits!
Chewbacca showed his fangs and growled. Grease was not intimidated.
"There's always a next time, Wookiee. Don't think you've won this."
"He didn't do anything that wasn't in the deal," Han said. "You have a problem? You have it with all of us."
"Oh, now I'm scared."
Sly went over to Han and tipped his head back. The tip of his snout just reached Han's belt.
"What happened to the horns, Ace?"
"Lost them in a firefight." Han tugged his hood forward, then pointed at the wide-eyed woman in the corner. "Why don't you apologize to the nice lady and leave? We'll take it from here."
"Leave?"
Imala shook her head and stepped to Sly's side.
"That deal went sour. You tried to kill us. We're all very disappointed in you."
"If he had tried, you'd be dead," Leia said. Han holstered his blaster, then looked at Chewbacca, nodded, and turned his palms up. Chewbacca tossed his bowcaster over, then dropped to his knees and lashed out with both arms, sweeping Grease and Sly into his grasp. Imala leapt instantly onto the Wookiee's back, her sharp squib teeth tearing out huge tufts of fur as she tried to rip her way down to his hide. He tucked the two males under one arm, then reached over his shoulder and plucked her off.
"Let go!"
Imala ordered.
"Don't make me rip your throat out."
Chewbacca rose, growling, and started for the front door.
"Stop!"
Grease ordered.
"You can't cut us out like this!"
Chewbacca left the Banai house and started up the street toward the alley, where, Leia hoped, he would be able to intimidate the squibs into leaving. She went to the woman in the corner, and, electing not to kneel in the jagged shards covering the floor, crouched beside her and took her hand. "It's over," she said. "They're gone." The woman turned a pair of shocked blue eyes on Leia.
Those terrors were yours?"
she asked. "We had a business arrangement." Leia looked around the ransacked room, taking in the child-sized tunics, a speeder toy smashed under an overturned vid console, the four limbs of a stuffed bantha lying across the room from each other. This was no part of it. Han picked up an overturned chair and brought it over. Things kind of got out of hand at the auction. As Han said this, Leia watched the woman's eyes and saw no sign of surprise. The Imperials were there. Still, no sign of surprise. But the woman asked, "Are you here to tell me something happened to Kitster?" "We think your husband escaped," Leia said. "Listen, we're very worried about Tamora," the woman put in. Leia continued to study the room. Ransacked though it was, the house was too clean for Tamora to be the type who left her children's clothes and toys lying around. "Tamora, are your children safe?" Tamora's manner went from evasive to angry. She stood and crunched across the room in her bare feet, stopping in the kitchen entrance to turn and face Leia. "Jai and Ellie are safe," she said. "They aren't here, and they don't concern you." "If you're sure." Leia was careful to avoid looking toward the locked doors of the plasteel pantry in the kitchen. "You have nothing to fear from us. I promise." "That promise would sound a lot more sincere on your way out the door," Tamora said. "Or at least, coming from someone whose face I could see." "I'm sure." Leia tipped her hooded head in acknowledgement. "But it's safer for all of us this way." "If you say so," Tamora said.
You're the one with the Wookiee.
Seeing that she was making little progress, Leia took a moment to circle the room, searching for another angle into the woman's confidence. Leia came to a transparent steel shelf hanging across from a pair of overturned reading chairs. There was only a little dust, probably just what had blown in through cracks during the storm, but enough to see that the empty place in the center had once been occupied by something square. This was where the holocube sat?
The Skywalker cube?
Temora asked.
Yes. Kitster liked it there. I'd catch him staring at it sometimes, so lost in the past, he wouldn't hear me come in.
Really? It was a hard thing for Leia to imagine. Someone having memories of Anakin Skywalker that he actually wanted to revisit.
So they really were close. That wasn't a sales pitch.
Anakin was his best friend. After Anakin won the Bunta, the Jedi who took him sold his podracer to a competitor. Anakin gave a few of those credits to Kit. It changed his life.
Changed his life? How?
Temora crouched down and began to rummage through the knick-knacks that had once occupied the empty shelf. Finally, she found an old flimsy-plast book and handed it to Leia.
Kitster used the credits to buy this.
Par Anthem's Guide to Etiquette? Leia asked.
A classic. I have a recent edition in my memory banks.
Leia passed the flimsy-plast back to Temora.
I take it Kitster put the information to good use. He became a steward at the Three Moons and earned enough to buy his freedom. Eventually, he became the Major Domo on the Rendala estate.
She cast an uneasy look at the holocube of Kitster at the mansion gate, then seemed to recall Han and turned to face him.
But I doubt you came to talk about Kitster's past.
Not really, Han said. Look, we're not out to hurt him.
In fact, we're even a little grateful to your husband for saving the painting, Leia said, and we're willing to compensate Kitster very handsomely for the risk he took. But now we need it back, Temora.
Back? Temora echoed.
Who are you?
That's not important, Leia said. What is important is that we'll pay enough that you and Kitster will never have to worry about finances again, and we'll make sure you can enjoy it in safety.
Grunt's voice came over Han's comlink.
Stormtroopers at the base of the hill. A full squad.
Temora's face paled, and she turned to look out the large window bubble in the front wall. The view did not extend beyond the homes across the street.
Look, we're talking as much money as the Imperials.
Han held out his hand and took a step toward her.
You owe it to your family to hear us out, and you don't want anyone here when the stormtroopers arrive anyway. Kids make pretty good bargaining chips.
I told you, my children aren't here.
Temora retreated toward the kitchen.
But nice try.
Nice try? Leia motioned Han to stay back. He's not kidding. They're going to tear this place apart. When they find your children, they'll take them hostage, and you'll be lucky to get anything at all for the painting. Temora's mask of resolve finally melted into indecision.
Kit said to trust no one.
She was speaking more to herself than to anyone else.
And he was right.
Leia felt sure that, with a little patience, Temora would turn to them for help. She had no choice, really. Kitster has gotten himself involved in some very serious business. I don't think he realizes how serious. Temora looked around the room, then shook her head.
I know he doesn't. He said to throw some clothes in a bag and go. I didn't even get to the bag.
And then the squibs were here, Leia said. You never had a chance. Han's comlink activated again. This time it was Chewbacca, telling them to come out the back way, and soon.
Time's up.
Han stepped toward Temora. They had barely taken a step before Temora called.
Wait!
Great.
Han started toward the kitchen.
Let's get the kids.
Temora continued to block the entrance.
Show me your faces.
Look, you really don't want to know, Han said. It will only put us all in more danger.
You mean put you in more danger? Temora countered. If you want my help, You'll have to trust me this far.
Leia looked at Han, then nodded. She's trusting us.
Not yet, Tamora pointed out.
Yeah, but it's not like we have a choice.
Han pulled back his hood, revealing his handsome rogue's face.
Maybe you've seen me hanging around. I used to spend a lot of time on Tatooine.
The way Tamora's jaw fell suggested that while she certainly recognized Han Solo, it was not from some seedy smuggler's cantina. Leia also pulled back her hood.
I hope this will satisfy you, because we really do have to leave.
Oh, I'm satisfied.
Tamora started across the room, moving away from the kitchen.
We'll leave the back way. It's less noticeable.
Aren't you forgetting something?
Han was scowling and looking into the kitchen at the plasteel pantry.
Like your kids, maybe?
They're in the back, Tamora motioned Han into the adjacent dome area. Do you really take me for the kind of mother who would lock her children in a pantry?
With eight beings crammed into a four-person landspeeder, Leia had to sit on Han's lap while Chewbacca, who needed the room of the forward compartments, drove. Tamora sat on C-3PO's lap in the front passenger seat, guiding them through a maze of dust-choked alleys deep into what looked like Mos Espa's merchant quarter. Grunt rode in back opposite Leia and Han, grumbling to himself about Wookiee driving and holding the black-haired Banai children in his lap.
Turn there.
Tamora pointed down a side lane so narrow that Chewbacca had to stop and spin the land speeder on its repulsor lips before entering. Tamora told Chewbacca to stop in front of a dingy mud and sand hut near the outskirts of the merchant district. A band-cut metal sign above the door read, Walled parts, good as new, at prices you can pay. If Tamora was telling the truth, Banai was waiting for her inside. Chewbacca opened the cowling and they piled out into the post-storm doldrums. The dust seemed to hang here even thicker than in Espa Heights, trapping the heat and making Tatooine's already stifling atmosphere even more searing and unbreathable. But with the first sun hanging low on the horizon, the evening colors were worthy of Aub Kadur. Above the roofs of the city hung a thick-banded sunset of scarlet, copper, and coral, topped by wispier ribbons of pink and yellow. And growing swiftly larger, sinking down out of the brilliant curtain of color, were a dozen eight-shaped silhouettes. Leia pointed at the expanding shapes. Han, are those... A familiar whine sounded from the direction she was pointing, growing louder and rising in pitch, and she knew the answer.
Ties!
Leia had barely spoken the word before the starfighters dropped in over Espa Heights and shrieked across the city, dust billowing off rooftops in their wakes. The squadron flashed past too fast for the eye to follow, trailing a series of sonic booms that blasted the dust-laden air into roiling gray haze, then screamed out over the desert and vanished. Chewbacca, whom the ion static had rendered into a fair imitation of a 2.5-meter bottle brush, groaned and pointed back over Mos Espa. A flight of 5 Sentinel-class landing craft was descending out of the lower sun, their noses already rising as they decelerated. At 54 stormtroopers per vessel, that would be 270 soldiers, a full assault company.
Oh my,
Tamora gasped. All that for a painting? Imperial commanders are accustomed to getting their way. Leia exchanged a worried glance with Han, then gently guided the Banai children toward their mother.
Why don't you take the children ahead? Of course, the children. We'll be inside.
Once they were gone, Han asked, What do you think? Did somebody recognize us at the auction?
Maybe,
Leia said. We can't really know, but I think we should assume the worst. She cast a pointed glance the direction of Grunt's. Han nodded and turned to the Weequay.
Thanks for all your help, but this isn't my fight.
The Weequay turned to go.
No way I'm sticking around.
Leia and Han pulled up their sand hoods and followed Tamora into Wald's parts. The interior was dim, relatively cool, and not all that dusty by Mos Espa standards.
It was also a wreck, with repulsor lift elements, servo drives, and droid components scattered across the floor. Tamora and her children were in the rear of the hut, where the lower half of a vaporator lay diagonally across the door to the yard. Han turned to Chewbacca. I thought you handled the squibs. You left them locked inside a recycling bin? Leia gasped. Chewie, it must be an oven inside. I don't care how hard they are to kill, Leia said. We can't leave them to bake. Kit! Tamora was working her way through the disarray, peering under half-toppled shelves and into the dark corners. Kitster, where are you? Han unholstered his blaster and turned to C-3PO. Keep watch.
Certainly.
C-3PO trained his photoreceptors out the door.
At present, there is nothing out there but our landspeeder.
3PO, just tell us if someone comes this way, Leia said.
Oh, I see. Certainly, Mistress Leia.
Han was already several steps inside, studying the room. Seeing that Chewbacca had already unslung his bowcaster and was quietly covering Tamora, Leia motioned Han to follow and went over to the service desk. The door to the rear office was closed. Leia started to go around the counter, but Han, ever the gallant, at least when it came to her, slid over the top and beat her to the office door. He hit the open key on the control pad, and nothing happened.
Locked.
Han stepped back and pointed his blaster at the control pad.
Watch out!
The door opened a crack, and the muzzle of a blaster rifle appeared in front of Han's hood. Leia started to step behind the counter to position herself next to the door, but a droning Rodian voice brought her to a halt.
Stay put, or his head is smoke.
The Rodian shoved the blaster into Han's hood, forcing him back, but remained out of Leia's line of fire.
Look, fella, we're just trying to find a friend.
You thought your friend might be hiding in my office?
Chewbacca arrived at the opposite end of the counter and pointed his bowcaster through the door. Apparently, he could see the Rodian.
Wald!
Tamora appeared from behind Chewbacca. Put that thing down and let me see Kitster. Wald did not lower the weapon.
What makes you think Kit is here?
Because he told me to meet him here.
Tamora's concern sounded genuine and substantial.
He has business with these people.
In my parts yard? What kind of business?
She can't tell you that, Han said.
Then I guess I can't keep my finger off this trigger.
Han's knuckles were turning white, and Leia knew what that meant.
Look, why don't we all put the blasters away?
She holstered her own weapon.
If we were really going to shoot each other, we'd have done it by now.
I wouldn't be so sure.
Han seemed to be glaring into the office.
I can be patient.
Leia stepped over, took the blaster from Han's hand, and laid it on the counter, then nodded at Chewbacca. You too. I think Wald here just needs Tamora to convince him that she's here voluntarily. Chewbacca stared through the door for a moment, then growled ominously and set his bowcaster on the counter. Wald kept his blaster pressed to Han's face.
Tamora, why don't you and the kids come into my office?
Tamora rolled her eyes, then snatched the bowcaster off the counter and pointed it at Chewbacca.
Okay, Wald, we have the drop on them.
She almost certainly lacked the strength to pull the bowcaster's trigger, but Leia was not going to tell her that.
Now will you believe me?
Wald let out a sound that resembled a chemical-cutting torch running out of fuel. Then the blaster rifle disappeared into the office, and a stocky little Rodian waddled into view.
Sorry about the blaster.
He held a green hand out to Han.
No hard feelings, huh?
No.
Han took the hand, teeth grinding so hard Leia could hear them.
Not many.
Kit!
Tamora shoved the bowcaster into Chewbacca's arms, then grabbed her children again and led them behind the counter toward Walt's office.
Where are you?
He's not back there.
Seeming to realize that a distraught wife would have to see for herself, Wald addressed himself to Han and Leia and allowed Tamora to look anyway.
He was here, though, with that moss painting everyone's after.
Leia tried not to show her alarm at the word everyone. And?
And Jurgo, a Kobaz cell secret, came in behind him and pulled a blaster. Jurgo wanted the moth painting. I had to lay out Jurgo with a hydro spanner.
So where's the painting now? Leia asked. Wald made a point of turning toward the door of his office.
Let's wait for Tamora.
A moment later, Tamora emerged alone, her eyes red from crying. Leaving her children in the office, she closed the door and went to Wald's side. Okay, Wald. What happened to Kit? Wald reluctantly looked away from Han and Leia, then said,
He took my old swoop out into the desert.
Tamora's face fell. The old swoop? Wald nodded.
It gets worse. He was going out through Arch Canyon.
Arch Canyon? Tamora gasped. The one in the old pod racing course? That Arch Canyon? Again, Wald nodded.
He said it's his only hope of keeping the Imperials off his tail.
Wald cast a disparaging look at Han and Leia, then added,
I told him he should just sell the painting to them and be done with it, but he wouldn't hear of it. He said Killik Twilight doesn't belong in Imperial hands.
Leia exhaled in silent relief. At least Tamora was right about that much. So who does Kitster plan to sell it to?
That's the thing. I don't think he means to sell it to anyone.
What? This from Leia, Han, and Tamora. Wald looked at Tamora.
He wasn't thinking right. He just kept talking about some Devaronian and Twi'lek who tried to blow it up, saying he was going to take it someplace safe.
Someplace safe? Leia could not believe what she was hearing. On Tatooine. Then what?
Well, I think he was hoping for a reward. He was going to send a message to Princess Leia.
Wald waddled closer and squinted up beneath Leia's hood, obviously trying to make out her features.
Except, I'm pretty sure he thought you were still on Coruscant.
Leia sighed. Is there anyone in Mos Espa who doesn't know who we are? Wald twisted his sensory horns back and forth and jerked a thumb toward Chewbacca and C-3PO.
A droid? A Wookiee? The painting? I'd have to be a lot blinder than I am not to figure that.
Thank you for pointing that out. Leia and the others had realized all along that staying together would make them easier to identify, but things were happening so fast they didn't dare separate. She turned to Han. At least we still have something going for us.
For a little while.
Wald pointed toward a security system, a small vidcam hidden in the ceiling corner.
I overheard the stormtroopers talking about their new admiral.
Pelion? Han asked.
All I know is, he awes them,
Wald said.
But you should know he thinks there's something in Killik Twilight the New Republic doesn't want the Empire to have. It's the only reason he can see for the Devaronian throwing a detonator at it.
Leia and Han exchanged looks of exasperation. Thanks for telling us, Wald. Leia took a calming breath, then turned to Tamora. Perhaps you'd care to calm Kitster? We can arrange a rendezvous. Tamora nodded and activated her comlink. Kit? A tiny echo of her voice sounded from the back of the room, beneath the toppled vaporator. Are you there?
There.
Again, the echo sounded from beneath the toppled vaporator. Chewbacca went to the back of the room and picked up a comlink identical to Tamora's.
Jubba!
Wald cursed.
That's where Jurgo grabbed him.
Leia sighed. Would it be too much to hope that he told you where he was going? Wald spread his hands.
Someplace safe. That's all he said.
Leia turned to Tamora next, but didn't even bother asking when she saw the look of despair on the woman's face. We'll never catch him in a landspeeder, Han said, especially not with a bunch of ties after him. He turned to Wald. Do you have another swoop? Wald and Tamora exchanged looks. Then Wald said,
I don't. Not one that can catch Kitster.
It's the one Wald used to win his freedom, Tamora explained.
Kitster and I built this from a design a friend's mother found in his room.
There was more than a touch of pride in Wald's voice.
It was nearly as fast as a pod racer.
A strange feeling of deja vu came over Leia, and she asked, "Who was this friend?"
"Anakin Skywalker,"
Wald said. "You knew Anakin?"
"Of course I knew him."
Wald sounded insulted.
"He was my pal. We were slaves together."
Leia's jaw dropped. "My father was a slave?"
"Don't make it sound like something dirty,"
Wald said, growing defensive.
"We were kids. It wasn't like we gambled our way into it."
That's not what she meant. Han took Leia's hand and gave it a little squeeze to break her out of her shock. It's just hard to believe that a slave grew up to be Darth Vader.
"Darth Vader?"
Wald waved his palms dismissively.
"That's a lie. Anakin Skywalker never became Darth Vader."
"Really?" Leia heard the ice in her tone, but found herself losing the battle to keep her temper under control. "And you know this how?"
"Because I knew him,"
Wald retorted.
"You don't understand what it takes, what it took back then, for a slave to win his freedom."
"So he got lucky and won a pod race," Leia said. "That hardly makes him a hero."
"It does on Tatooine, dear."
Han took Leia by the arm, then pulled her closer and said more gently, "Damp down your power core. We need this guy's help."
"I'm afraid I must interrupt,"
C-3PO said, awkwardly picking his way through the debris strewn on the floor.
"The squibs are here.
I'll get rid of them."
Wald started toward the door.
"I'm sure they're just here to sell me something I don't need."
He was too late. The trio came boiling into the hut, their fur ruffled and greasy, and their belt pouches loaded with all the broken comm links, data pads, and glow rods they had retrieved from the recycling bins. Wald met them 3 paces from the door.
"Grease, Sly, I'm not buying anything. And we're not selling,"
Sly said. The squib swept past the Rodian as though he wasn't there and came straight for Leia and Han, not quite able to keep their gazes from straying to all the interesting stuff scattered over the floor.
"I can't believe how you treated us,"
Imala said to Han.
"We thought you were a player."
Grease waved the credit transfer chip at Han's belt.
"Try to cut us out again, and we go straight to Mabo with this. We'll pay her and take the painting ourselves."
"She doesn't have the painting."
Han tried to snatch the chip away, but Grease was too quick for him.
"And you can't pay Mabo our money. She wouldn't activate that chip."
Wald came up behind the squibs.
"How are these three involved?"
"They're not."
Leia pulled a 2,000 credit voucher from her pocket and held it out to Grease.
"We'll buy you out."
The squibs shook their heads without bothering to look at the amount.
"There's no buyout option,"
Sly said.
"We were the successful bidders. So the painting belongs to us,"
Grease added.
"Until we receive the negotiated payment."
"I'm offering you twice what we paid for your, wares in the auction," Leia said. "Take a look."
"Doesn't matter,"
Sly said.
"It's not the same fee."
"If that's the way you want to play it."
Leia continued to hold the voucher out.
"I'll cancel the transfer chip. You'll be out your fee and your proceeds."
The squib's eyes grew round, and Grease said,
"Well, think about it."
All three began to back toward the door. Leia watched them go, then slipped the voucher into her pocket and turned back to Han.
"You were about to ask Wald something."
Han's expression remained blank.
"I was?"
"About a swoop?" Leia prompted.
"Wald said he didn't have another one that could catch the one Kitster took."
"Right, but what about the transfer chip? Shouldn't you be canceling it?"
"No need," Leia said.
"Unless I'm there to authorize the transfer, the chip will self-destruct when they try to use it."
"It'll be nice to see someone getting the best of those three for a change,"
Wald said.
"But I doubt I'll be much help with the swoop."
Tamora's face fell.
"Wald, please. You know Kitster. He doesn't stand a chance out there. Not with the Imperials chasing him."
Wald nodded gravely.
He turned to Tamora.
There's only one swoop that can catch the one Kitster took. You know where you need to go.
Tamora's face paled. Ool does? Wald nodded.
I know it won't be easy, but she has that old rocket swoop Rail used to fly. If you want, I'll take them over.
Tamora shook her head. No, she'd see through that. She turned, and not seeming to notice whether anyone was following, said, I have to go. Leia lingered behind just long enough to be sure Tamora was out of earshot, then asked, What's so terrible about this Ulda?
Nothing,
Wald said.
Unless you happen to be Kitster's second wife.
As the land speeder circled the outskirts of Mos Espa, Leia watched the terrain outside slip past. Leia's thoughts kept drifting back to her father. Wald's revelation had caught her off guard. Learning that Anakin Skywalker had been a child slave painted him as a victim, an image so at odds with the monster in her mind that she actually found herself wanting to agree with Wald's outrageous assertion, to believe that her father had not been Darth Vader. Perhaps more disturbing than Wald's revelation was the way Tatooine seemed to be working on her. She was starting to see Mos Espa not as a corrupt spaceport, but as the home of beings like Tamora and Wald, who lived and grew old here, and somehow found their measure of happiness. Even the desert was beginning to feel inviting. It still struck her as dangerous, more so than ever, in fact, but Leia was growing aware of its beauty, of its majesty of scale and subtleness of color, and of the promise of mystery waiting in its hidden heart. The landspeeder entered a vast sunken arena at the edge of town. Though there was no barricade to control access, a metal sign arching over the outer edge of the lot read, Mos Espa, Swoop Arena. Tamora directed Chewbacca around the far end and down to a row of dilapidated hangars, designated Owner's Row by a small sign display. Chewbacca opened the cowling, and they climbed out of the speeder's climate-controlled comfort into the dusty heat of a Tatooine late afternoon. A combination lounge and bedding parlor that had been converted from an old pod racer owner's booth. It was clean, but austere, with a bar and several bedding windows in the rear. In front, three rows of plastoid tables were arrayed before a transparent steel wall that overlooked the track below. Leia was surprised to feel her heart flutter as she began to see the magnitude of the dilapidated racing track. At least 500 meters wide, it stretched a full 2 kilometers in each direction before vanishing from sight, curving away into a labyrinth of rocky pinnacles on one end and emerging from an immense plain of gray dust pack on the other. This was where her father had won his freedom. A human woman of about 50 emerged from behind the bar and approached, her gaze locked on Tamora with a look that could only be described as astonished. Slender and tall, she had the high cheekbones and arched eyebrows of a Kuwati aristocrat, an impression reinforced by her broad-shouldered gown and bejeweled belt.
Well, well, Tamora Spice.
She stopped and put her hands on her hips, looking Tamora up and down.
You've put on a few kilos, but bearing the children of another woman's man will do that to you.
Tamora's face reddened, but she resisted the temptation to make a sharp reply.
You look as lovely as ever, Ulda.
Ulda flipped a nonchalant hand.
Money.
She smiled bitterly.
Speaking of which, I hear Kit put that awful holocube of his in Morbo's auction.
Tamora nodded. Now that the Rendala estate is closed, I suppose finances must be tight.
We're managing.
Ulda pushed out her lip.
Pity. I thought you might be here for a loan.
As a matter of fact, Han said. He stepped forward, his patience with the woman's harassment coming to a quick end, as Leia had known it would.
We do.
Leia caught him by the wrist. Let Tamora handle this. Tamora swallowed, then said,
My friend is right. We do need to borrow something. Kit's in trouble. The Imperials are looking for him.
For Kit?
Ulda's expression hovered somewhere between shock and doubt.
Whatever for?
Instead of answering, Tamora said, "He took Walled Swoop." Ulda's face fell.
He did what?
He took Walled Swoop into Arch Canyon, Tamora said,
to get away from the Imperials. Kit can't ride swoops. An Arch Canyon!
Ulda let the sentence trail off and shook her head, then looked up at Tamora again. You still haven't told me why the Imperials are looking for him. Deciding now would be a good time to take control of the conversation, Leia stepped to Tamora's side. He stole a painting they wanted. Ulda asked,
Kill it, Twilight?
Leia nodded.
Why?
We're still trying to figure that out, Leia said.
To save it,
Tamora insisted. Yeah, Kit was just trying to be helpful, Han said, ever the cynic. And maybe he thought a few credits would be nice, too. Ulda considered this, then shook her head sadly.
Either way, I'm going to miss him.
He's not gone yet, Tamora said, summoning her resolve. Wald said you have Rayo's swoop. Ulda shrugged.
So?
So, I'm going after Kit, Han said.
That bike's not for rent, Ulda said. Maybe I can let him take another.
Another one can't catch Wald's, Tamora said.
We'll purchase Rayo's swoop, Leia offered. Is 15,000 enough? That caught Ulda's attention. She looked up into the darkness beneath Leia's hood, either trying to guess the identity of her visitor, or calculating how much she could take her for. 30,000, Leia said. Kitster already has a 20-minute lead.
And you're not going to change that by getting your man killed.
Ulda stood and turned to the group gathered down in the front of the parlor.
Odi, go fetch Rayo. I need her to take her old swoop out.
You don't want to do that, ma'am.
A blue-skinned Erkit with a large egg-shaped head and downturned ears turned to look back at her.
She couldn't pilot a land speeder right now.
Again? The Erkit nodded and went back to his datapad. Leia exchanged a relieved glance with Han, then said, I can't imagine that 30,000 isn't enough, but...
It's not the credits, Ulda said. I'd give it to you for 20. But that thing's been the death of 6 riders.
I bought it just to keep it off the track.
Han stepped forward. Look, lady, if it has a seat and a thruster, I can fly it. Ulda studied Han, then turned to Leia.
Let me see him ride the regular swoop first.
Without awaiting a reply, Ulda turned to the front of the parlor again.
Odi, take this man down to the hangar. Let him take that old Novastar around the test track once.
The Erkit rose and, hobbling badly, started toward them.
The Novastar?
The Novastar. Do we need to have your ears flushed again?
Ulda turned to Leia.
Pod racers. You have to wonder whether they have half a brain left because they used to race, or they used to race because they had half a brain.
It was a nice cover, but Leia was too careful a listener to have missed the surprise in the Erkit's voice. There was something wrong with the Novastar. She turned to Han.
Take the Wookiee along and give that swoop a close look. If you don't like it, ask for another.
What's not to like? Han gave a quick head tip to show that he understood the warning, then turned to follow Odi. Leia descended the stairs to the forwardmost row of tables. Ulda took Leia by the arm. She pulled her toward the opposite end of the parlor.
Perhaps we should watch from over here.
Down on the track, Han and Chewbacca were following Odi out to the test loop, walking a battered swoop between them. Han had bored her many times with tales of the races he had won as a boy, which, along with Dulana, the old Wookiee cook who had looked after him, seemed to be the only things he recalled fondly from his childhood. But there was something wrong about that bike. Really wrong. This has gone far enough, Leia said to Ulda.
There's no need to worry.
Ulda continued to watch them approach the test loop.
If your man is good enough to handle Rayo's swoop,
He'll be fine on this little Nova Star.
Leia recognized a classic Bothan claim test when she saw one. Put the subject in a situation where he either had to admit he was lying or prove that he wasn't. But this one had a hidden twist. I'm very fond of my man. Leia put as much ice into her voice as she could, and she had been told she can give a Wampa the chills. I would be very upset if an unnecessary accident befell him.
Then I hope he's as good as you say.
Ulda's carefully maintained poise slipped a little.
For both our sakes.
The trio reached the test loop, a thin ribbon of sand track circling the inner pit area, no more than a kilometer in length. Chewbacca held the swoop while Han climbed on. Odie spent a few moments trying to show Han the controls, then seemed to realize he already knew them and stepped away. That was when Ulda pulled a comlink from her sleeve.
Odie, didn't he check the control vanes?
Odie nodded and raised a comlink to his lips.
In the hangar.
Han activated the ion thrusters.
So he fixed them?
Odie shook his head and Chewbacca stepped back.
Then don't just stand there. Get him off that swoop.
Han twisted the throttle and was gone. Han was halfway down the first leg of the loop when the swoop's nose suddenly came up and he shot into the air like a missile. Ulda was on her comlink instantly.
Odie, what's happening?
Odie spread his hands. Then Han reached the first turn, spun the swoop upside down, and began a sharp banking descent that carried him to the backside of the loop. He did not turn the swoop right side up again until he was so close to the ground that a sand plume began to shoot out behind him, showing off as usual. Han climbed into the air again as he came to the second turn, then flipped the swoop over and repeated the maneuver. He was still rounding the corner when Ulda raised the comlink to her lips again.
Odie, get Rayo's swoop ready and put the vid map aboard.
The air kit waved and started back toward the hangar, then hit the sand as a long line of white armored figures on Imperial speeder bikes entered the track from the direction of Mos Espa. They rounded the curb, speeding toward the far end of the arena.
Don't tell me, Leia said. They're going into Arch Canyon.
Ulda nodded toward the canyon mouth at the far end of the arena.
That's the fastest way in. Kit!
Tamora gasped. Ulda surprised Leia again by laying a hand over Tamora's.
It's going to be okay. Your friend will find him first.
He will? This from Leia.
Of course.
Ulda continued to look at Tamora.
He'll know where Kit's going.
Tamora appeared dazed.
How?
Kit was mine for a lot of years. Ulda could not resist smirking.
And I guess I still know some things about him that you never will.
Rayo's swoop was little more than a seat, laser welded onto the top of an old IPG long-tail pod racing engine, with a few jury-rigged control vanes, a big land speeder repulsor lift to keep it off the ground, and a transparent plastoid pilot's cowling. Han loved it, but the idea of riding the thing frightened him. As Odie mounted a hands-off vidmap between the handlebars, Han slipped into the flight suit Ulda had insisted he would need, then spent a few moments walking around the machine, checking to see that all control surfaces moved freely. By the time Han finished his survey, the vidmap was mounted and programmed. Han's destination was an empty, isolated little house in the desert, about two-thirds of the way to Jabba's old palace.
This is where Kitster goes to find peace of mind, Ulda explained.
Han rubbed his hand along the swoop's engine housing.
I'll have to be careful about breaking the sound barrier with this baby.
Yes, do.
Ulda handed him a bulky helmet with a full face mask, built-in comlink, and heads-up display, linked to the vidmap.
It wobbles just before you punch through.
Really?
Han forced a smile to cover his astonishment. He had been joking about breaking the sound barrier.
You can't be serious.
Ulda nodded that she was. Han turned to find Leia's jaw hanging slack with disbelief, her eyes brown and liquid with hurt.
What are you worried about?
He opened the face mask and kissed her, making certain to linger until she let him go.
I am coming back, you know.
Leia was still thinking about Han's parting words half a standard hour later, as Tamora guided them through a warren of sand and mud huts in Mos Espa's poorest section of town. They pulled up in front of a small shabby hut packed tight against dozens of other small shabby huts.
This old slave hut came with the parts yard. I think it belonged to your father's master, Watto.
Tamora waited until the cowling rose, then climbed out of the speeder and went to the door, opening it with a security code Walt had provided over a comlink.
It's a good place to lie low.
Leia followed Tamora through the door. Though dusty and disordered, the hut was more spacious inside than she had imagined, with a central vault and three bump-out rooms, one on the same level for cooking and two elevated sleeping chambers. Leia turned to Tamora.
Could this have been where Anakin Skywalker and his parents lived?
Tamora shrugged.
Maybe. And there was just a mother, I think. Kit never mentioned Anakin's father.
She ran a finger over the table and looked at the dust it picked up.
No cleaning droids here, I guess.
It'll be fine. We won't be here that long. Leia saw a flash of impatience in Tamora's eyes and realized she might not have been the one Tamora was thinking about.
For us, I mean. If you think it's too dirty for Jai and Ellie...
Hardly, Tamora said. Those two would sleep in a sand dune if I let them. Chewbacca will take you to fetch them from Wald's as soon as I get something out of the landspeeder. Our mobile holocom, Leia said. I need to send a message to Mon Mothma to let her know what happened at the auction. Chewbacca nodded and fetched the holocom from the landspeeder cargo bay, then left for Wald's with Tamora. After setting up the unit and calibrating the antenna dish, Leia sent C-3PO outside to watch for Imperial spycraft above the city. After computing the local time in the Coruscant government district, Leia decided Luke was the only safe person to contact. And Leia had been wanting to talk to Luke since her dream aboard the Falcon, to see the smiling face she knew and loved and be sure all was well. Whether she should also tell him about what she had seen, Leia was uncertain. She opened the channel to Luke's apartment. It took only a moment for a hazy, fist-sized image of his head to appear over the holocom pad, his dimpled chin propped on his thumbs and his blue eyes fixed on the documents.
Just a moment.
Luke finished what he was reading, then looked up.
Thanks. Go ahead.
Anything in there about Jedi Masters needing their sleep? Leia asked. Luke lowered his hands out of the image and stared at her across space.
Why would I sleep when I knew you would be calling?
Knew? Those training records must be... Leia saw the corners of his mouth rise, and realizing she had fallen for the master act again, let the sentence trail off. She leaned toward the holocom and spoke in a quieter voice.
Listen, we had some unexpected company at the auction.
Leia told Luke about the old code key hidden inside Killick Twilight, the Imperial attempt to purchase the painting, its subsequent theft, and how the situation had deteriorated since.
I'm afraid we alerted the Chimera to the painting's significance when we tried to destroy it.
Luke nodded, but said,
You did the right thing. With the code key hanging in some Admiral stateroom, the New Republic would have had to scrap Shadowcast anyway. And if they found it later, there might still be a lot of dead spies.
I know, Leia said, but the way things stand now... If Han doesn't recover that painting first, we'll have our dead spies a lot sooner.
This time, Luke did not try to reassure her.
What can I do?
Not much, I'm afraid, Leia said. Things are moving too fast for you to get here. But I need you to inform Mon Mothma, personally. Nobody else knows the real reason we want Twilight.
I'll see her first thing in the morning.
Thank you, Leia said. And tell her that if she doesn't hear from us before Wraith Squadron leaves...
Leaves?
Luke interrupted. Leia had a sinking feeling. In 2 days,
she said. Don't tell me they're gone.
Wedge canceled the get-together we had planned for tomorrow night. He didn't say why, but I had the impression that something was happening sooner than expected.
That's bad, Leia said. The Wraiths had been scheduled to leave on a mission to Askage to capture Grand Moff Wilkadin during his annual inspection of his Temuin holdings. The plan called for Wedge Antilles, who would be in command of the operation, to use Shadowcast to activate a cell of local resistance fighters who would provide most of the dirtside intelligence and firepower. If the network was compromised, either there would be no one to help the Wraiths when they arrived, or there would be an entire Imperial armada waiting to ambush them. Possibly both. Very bad, Leia added.
Should I ask Mon Mothma to have a recall message sent?
Leia shook her head. We might do more harm than good. They're going deep, under total comm silence, and the only way to contact them is Shadowcast itself. She did not need to explain that what Shadowcast offered in security, it suffered in speed. Every message had to be laboriously encoded, then inserted as a ghost wave into a pre-designated commercial program and holocast on the regular schedule. What all this meant was that it would take at least a day to recall the Wraiths, by which time they could well be beyond the point of no return. We just have to get that code key, Leia said.
And if you can't?
It'll take the Imperials at least a few days to crack the codes, Leia said. That might be long enough.
May the Force be with you, then.
Thank you, Leia said, thinking of how ironic those words really were under the circumstances. Tell Mon Mothma that will keep her informed. If she doesn't hear from us within 2 days, she should assume Shadowcast has been compromised.
I'll tell her.
Luke pursed his lips, and when Leia made no move to break the connection, said,
I sense there's more you'd like to talk about.
Leia smiled wryly and asked, Is it the Force, or am I growing predictable?
A little of both.
Leia sighed. Luke, why didn't you tell me Anakin Skywalker grew up in Mos Espa?
How did you find that out?
I met his best friend, Leia said. His name is Kister Benai, and you still haven't answered my question. Luke's head tipped forward.
Honestly, Leia, I just didn't think you wanted to know.
Did you know he was a pod racer? Luke's image nodded. He's a local hero. Luke smiled.
Really?
Really. Leia's voice dripped sarcasm.
Leia, he was just a boy. Do you think he came out of the womb wearing a breather and a black helmet?
Leia recalled her dream aboard the Falcon. The thought had crossed my mind. She paused, wondering if she should, if she dared tell him about that. It was a little like telling someone that you had seen how they were going to die. They might be better off not hearing it. Luke, did you ever feel anything strange around Tatooine?
Define strange. You know what kind of place Tatooine is.
I can't say. His presence, maybe. Or yours. Leia told him about her conversations with Wald, and the odd feelings of familiarity she had been having around Mos Espa, leaving out mention only of her dream. I keep feeling like the Force is leading me down a Skywalker path, and I'm not sure I like it. Luke's head grew larger as he leaned closer to his holocom.
You don't have to like it. Just don't fight it, Leia. The Force isn't anyone's servant. The presence you're feeling has nothing to do with me or our father. If the Force is acting on you, it's responding to you.
That's not possible, Leia said. I'm no Jedi.
You don't have to be a Jedi to be destroyed by your own fear and anger.
Me? Leia shook her head. I may be worried about Han, but I'm not fearful in the way you mean. And I'm not angry at anyone at the moment. Luke said nothing and waited. The image was too hazy to be certain, but he was probably staring patiently at Leia. Anyone living, she corrected. Darth Vader doesn't count.
Not really. Darth Vader isn't the one you need to make peace with. The Force is around you, and nothing you do can change that.
Now Luke leaned so close to his holocom that Leia could see little more than his eyes, blue, soft and hazy.
Leia, you may be in danger here. If you're not careful, your fear and anger will only make you into what you despise.